Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
It's awfully, presumptuous that we know what you care about and we know what guests you want to hear. That was, we're off to a very presumptuous start.
Like the music, though.
It's something. It's like put a 5 CD changer on random. For people who grew up in the 90s, they would know what that is. Anybody under 22 does not know what a 5 CD changer is. But this is it. This is our first episode.
Yeah. This is exciting.
Roberto Luongo is going to join us.
Yes.
The Florida Panthers goalie, Richard Deitch, who's never played goalie with any NHL team and isn't ever going to. I think that's safe. It's a safe, again, presumption on my part, right? He'll join us from SportsIllustrated.com. And we've got each other. People have asked me in the last few days, how did this come together? Whose idea was this? Who got dragged kicking and screaming into this? Who approved this when you finally had agreement that you would do this? And all these are very good questions. I wouldn't even know which one. Which one do you want to answer?
Well, and I was going to say, sometimes certain questions don't need an answer. Both of us, though, we've been wanting to both do a podcast for a while, and we didn't know that each other...
That's right. And you lived somewhere else for a while. And so
I did.
Was, how would you do a podcast 3 hours away without... Yeah, eye contact's important in this case to figure out who's asking questions and,
that's true.
And who's asked a question that ran on too long. I'm going to get that evil eye from you.
Especially because we haven't worked together closely like this before either. We've known each other for a number of years just from The Fan. Because for those who don't know, Greg, you host the morning show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
That's right.
In Toronto.
That's right. Brady and Price, Sportsnet's starting lineup with Hugh Burrell, who's the other man. Yeah, he's a man. The other man on that particular program. And we see you on Sportsnet Central. Now, you move around a fair bit, not in your chair, but different co-hosts, different... I'd say you work with, what, 4 or 5 different people at different times?
Yeah,
right?
It kind of depends. My usual co-host is Carly Agro, but
right now,
Ivanka Osmak, she is on maternity leave. So Carly and I are alternating each month working with Ken Reed on the 10 p.m. Eastern edition. But usually, and this month, I am on the late night. So I guess it's 10 Pacific, mm-hmm. but it's 1 a.m. Eastern. And then that runs as the morning show. So we work completely opposite hours.
Yeah.
So if I'm ever asking awful questions, let's just blame it on sleep deprivation.
On sleep deprivation.
Yeah, because we tape this in the morning.
Yeah, so we would nap. We would both accumulate napping hours during people's working hours, but at probably very different times, potentially. Although a couple days ago, well, when we first started recording stuff, we might have been I slept, what would that be? Monday. I slept from about 2:30 until 4. Does that seem...
P.M.?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you have been asleep?
I'm just
then?
Starting to nap. I'm not a usual napper, but now I'm finding I have to.
See, you have to. I find men. Maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel like men really enjoy naps, and they'll brag about them. It's almost kind of like would you go to a female colleague and go, "I put 3.5 hours down yesterday afternoon." Actually, that just doesn't feel like it's...
No, I think I would.
Would you?
Yeah, Carly and I talk about naps. Yeah. I was actually asking her for napping advice last night at work.
Mm. And Ivanka is coming along, doing what, like, because, you know, we don't want to be there for the birth, but we want to know. I've been through that twice.
Going?
3 times
yeah.
would be too many, and it's not mine. So how how have you heard she is, and she's excited? And
she's doing well. I went to see her in maybe 2 weeks after she gave birth, and she looked a lot more put together than I did. So that made me reevaluate things in my life.
But
I was up late watching Netflix probably the night before.
Explain this to people also. You're binging a particular... Before we get into Roberto Luongo, and we won't ask him if he's watching the show you're watching, because I bet you he's not.
He probably did in 2005.
Right. This seems like an older... Yeah, during the lockout. The first lockout, when he was with the Panthers. I feel like this show was on TV. This isn't something like, oh, God, brand new season of House of Cards. I got to get into
or
it right 13 away.
13 Reasons Why, which everyone's watching.
What's the
now.
Show?
Bones. So, but you know on Netflix how it says... like for me, it says, "Carolyn, we think you'd enjoy this." And I trust Netflix. And I thought, let me check this out. And now I'm just spending all my free time watching Netflix and Bones, which started 12 years ago. I now have 12 years worth of television to catch up on, which cancels all my summer plans.
And it's obviously not terrible. It has 38.
No, it's good.
It has 38 career Emmy nominations.
See?
So it has been around a fair bit. But I the one thing I'd say to tell you how old Bones is, Emily Deschanel is the one of the stars of it, right? With the guy that was in that wolf person show with Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes. He's a Flyers fan, I believe. He's a big hockey fan.
Oh, he is, yeah. But Emily Deschanel, this show was on before anybody knew who Zoe Deschanel was. So that's how old it is. We've discovered her. She's gone on to The New Girl, and I've seen a couple movies she's been in, but we only knew her older sister. This is like knowing the other Hilton sister and not Nikki Hilton and not Paris Hilton.
Just like that. Yeah, some of my friends are saying I need to get with the times and watch 13 Reasons Why, but I'll just watch that in 2029.
And how far are you along in Bones?
I would almost prefer not to share that, considering I started it on Saturday.
Do you feel like you're
quite far along?
Like, because sometimes you can go, like, what was it? Justified was so fantastic, and I watched, but we sort of... You make that mutual decision with your significant other, and you're like, should we keep going? Should we not? And we were done after three seasons. We didn't start a fourth because we thought we'd gotten the maximum enjoyment. Whereas some stuff, Breaking Bad, Sopranos, of course you're not quitting. Like, these are seminal shows. But do you feel like you'll get through all dozen?
Probably not. Own life, I hope not. But the issue with Netflix is, at the end of every episode, there's the countdown in the bottom right-hand corner, and it says something along the lines of, would you like to continue? And it shouldn't say, would you like to? Of course I'd like to. It's, do I need to? And the answer is usually always no, go to bed, something else.
But there's also a countdown clock. So again, it's
so you're almost there and you think, well,
three. Presumptuous, and it's counting down, and you can't find the remote, and you're like, well, it just started, so what am I going to do now? Well, you're going to turn it off, and you're going to go to bed, is what you're going to do.
And now that the Raptors are out, I'll just be watching more Netflix in between NHL playoff games.
Yeah, I was trying to visualize a Raptors Golden State final and how the games would start earlier, because the NBA finals kind of makes it more, it doesn't matter who's playing and where the time zones are. They start every game at 9 o'clock, but how fun it would have been. And we're still waiting on this, right? The Jays came close to being one of the last two teams. The Leafs have not been one of the last two teams, and neither, it's been a long, long, it's been since 1993, not just that a team has won, since the fall, and TFC did it. So TFC did something that no Toronto team had done, like make it to the final or the final series. And there was just that sense of inevitability about the Raptors. And man, have they got such decisions to make about, like, what is good enough? What is success? These are things they got to ask themselves, because you can't just bang yourself on the head and go, well, we don't have LeBron James, what can we do? You still got to keep trying to beat LeBron James. It's a weird thing to say, but they do.
Well, and I think you're bang on about what is success. And I think after a situation where you are swept with the Cavs and they're felt in the series like there was little hope, never felt like the Raptors had a chance. I think fans just think, well, that's not good enough. They need to be better. So for some reason, and I don't fully understand this, it seems that part of the fan base says, well, let's just start over. Let's kind of clean house, reset, and see what we can do. But in my eyes, a 51-win season, that's good. That's what a lot of teams in the league are aiming for. Sure, you're one of those teams that right now your main goal is to beat the Cavs, whereas teams like the Celtics, the Bulls, the 76ers, when their youth really developed, they're just trying to get higher up in the East to where the Raptors are. But, I mean, baby steps. There's no need to tear down a team. Just reevaluate. And I think Masai Ujiri will be very good at doing that. He doesn't, to me, seem like a start from scratch kind of guy.
I think you sometimes do have to react to what competitors are doing in any field. So there are reactionary moves, and there are moves that you do just for you. But this is the stat I had on the morning show on Monday. The Raps' home record the last 4 years in regular season games is 113-51. So that's a .689 winning percentage. The previous 4 years, and that counts the first year without Chris Bosh. That counts the last year with Chris Bosh, I should say, in 09-10, was 75-85. So they went from a .469 winning percentage those 4 years to .689. And just for small potato stuff, you know, think about going with three other people to a game and what you spend and the merchandise and the beer and the hot dogs and everything and the tickets and the parking, and a lot fewer people went to those games in those 4 years compared to the last. So people like winning, and they've really enjoyed this group. So there are economic decisions to make also. It's like, if you were the third biggest car company, you sold the third most cars in North America, you wouldn't go, well, we're not number one, and we'd tear it all up. You'd look and go, third's pretty good. We could be 11th, right. And we'd be firing people, and mm-hmm. we'd be hiring new marketing people and paying people severance and getting. You don't have to do that if you're the Raptors right now, but you have to endeavor to get better. But I also think they have to endure and wait this out. Like, it's almost like waiting out a storm somewhat. That's yeah. how good the Cavaliers are right now. Let's see if they are as good next year and the year after that. And without being competitive, you got no chance.
And again, the difficult part about that, especially in the NBA, is the NBA is not like baseball or especially hockey, where once you're in, anything can happen. In recent years, it's kind of clear what's going to happen in the NBA playoffs because the teams like the Warriors, even the Spurs, the Cavs are so dominant. But yeah. you still have to just have as good a team as you can get. And that's what Masai Ujiri, I think, is doing right now. And then just cross your fingers and hope for the best. And, hope that you win.
Yeah. And yet people sort of do dig the dynasty thing. The ratings will be great for Golden State Cleveland. It's just a lot of schlepping you got to go through to get there. Like mm-hmm. even the next round is wake me up. It doesn't matter if Washington, Boston, Houston, San Antonio are through. This outcome feels utterly inevitable that it's a third straight year. And we want this. Like, I don't want San Antonio to upset Golden State now.
Oh, see, I can't.
And
see,
I don't want Boston to beat LeBron. I don't want that.
Okay, no, I want the Cavs to keep going, but I would love to see the Spurs push the Warriors and maybe beat them. I think it would be exciting. I love the Spurs. Kawhi Leonard is one of the most underrated MVP candidates in the league.
He's properly rated. He's probably going to finish ahead of LeBron James.
Well, I hope so.
Wrong.
Well, no. People don't talk about him enough in the West. Don't get me started.
I know. And Tim Duncan, too. He'd probably go down as the most underrated superstar ever in North American sports.
He's just sitting at home, feet up.
Yeah.
Watching it all unfold.
One guy who is and may not be enjoying it is Roberto Luongo, and we're going to get to him in just a second. We should remind you, the show has a Twitter account. The podcast has a Twitter account.
Oh, yes. Good plug.
At
SN. Yeah. Point taken. We don't yet have a picture, which probably, is it an A? Is it a Twitter egg or whatever?
By the time people hear this, well, then we'd be harassing media personalities if we were a Twitter egg. That's what
exactly.
Usually I'm like, sometimes I'll see somebody retweet somebody and I'll be like, I feel like I have that person blocked or muted already. And I'm like, yes, I was right. How did I know?
We're legitimate.
It's legitimate.
Or we will be legitimate. That's our aim.
Well, the blue check mark may need to land more Roberto Luongos and Richard Deitch's to get the blue check mark, but we'll see. There's people around the office that seem to give out the blue check mark. I remember when I got asked, would you sign here for the blue check mark? And I'm like, yes.
Did you read the fine print?
No.
Did you sign away your house?
It didn't feel that way. Well, our next guest is, we're very excited to have him on. He is one of the great goalies in NHL history, and he's still playing, 38 years old, fifth in all-time wins, and of course the two gold medals for Team Canada. He also won the Western Conference with the Vancouver Canucks and won 15 games that year in the postseason in 2011. He's kind enough to join us from his home in Florida. Today, it's Roberto Luongo. It's very exciting to have you on. I know you'd rather be playing hockey right now. We've got a lot we're excited to talk to you about. By the way, you've a long, long Wikipedia page. We knew about you before and we know you. The strangest thing on there, I hope you'll admit, is that you were inducted into the Italian Walk of Fame in Toronto.
I know. What an honor. I have my star on the sidewalk and everything, so you guys should go check it out.
Where is it?
I don't know. I think it's okay. Somewhere near, is it Yorktown, Yorkville or something around there?
Fancy.
Yeah, I know. Somebody sent me a picture of it a while ago, and like it's cracked and everything, so we gotta refurbish it.
That's where we do all our research, is Wikipedia.
Yeah. So yeah. How does one get note? Do you get an email? Does your agent say, you're not going to believe this, or you will believe it? How does that happen? How does that manifest itself?
You know what? I don't even remember. It was so long ago. I think it was probably through one of my buddies that actually lives in Toronto. But don't quote me on that. But I don't know. Maybe it was somebody tweeted me, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. Like something crazy like that.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's May, and you've had a lot of Mays and some Junes where you've been still playing hockey. I'll ask you this because I remember seeing you with the Panthers your first go around. You were 28 years old before you got to play in an NHL playoff game. Not the best of luck. Then you played in a ton of them. You were back last year. Was it harder as a younger player to sort of watch the playoffs and not feel part of it? And like I said, you're fifth in all-time wins. You've won so many playoff series, gone to a Game 7 of the final. Is it easier now to watch now that you're a established future Hall of Fame goaltender? Was it harder when you were younger to watch the playoffs?
Nah, I think it's harder now. I mean, when you're younger, you're just coming into the league, and you're just happy to be in the NHL, and you strive for the playoffs. But you tell yourself, you know, if it didn't happen this year, you got lots of time. But now that you're older, and you know how many years you have left, and you try to relish every chance you get. And the fact that we were in the playoffs last year, and now this year we're not, it's tough to watch. It's tough to look at other teams still playing and you sitting on your couch and packing down the LBs now that we're 30 years old, you know?
Have you been watching a lot of the games, a lot of the series?
Not as much as I used to. I think, once in a while, if I see that a game's in overtime, I'll flip it on because I do enjoy overtime. I think it's so exciting and best part of hockey. But usually I watch more. I mean, but this year, for some reason or not, I think I haven't watched that much as I usually do.
Did you throw a remote at your TV in Game 5 of Ducks Oilers when you saw Kessler on Cam Talbot's pad?
Oh my God! I wasn't watching that game, but I did. I did follow up on Twitter the next morning, and they had like the videos of it and stuff. And it's crazy, man. I don't know. It's tough to understand sometimes what the rule is, but. You know, at the end of the day, it's part of hockey, and sometimes the decisions are going to go for you, and in my case, they'll never go for you, so we just learn to live with those.
Roberto Luongo joining us on Point Taken on Sportsnet's podcast with Carolyn Cameron, Craig Brady. You are the winning goalie of the sixth longest overtime game ever, back in 07 when Henrik Sedin scored 78 minutes, 6 seconds. There are probably many times where you'll claim, when you win, I'm the most tired guy on the ice. When you finished that game, were you? You famously had to leave and come back, but so many of your players are going deep into that sixth, seventh period of play. It was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that was actually my first playoff game ever, so it was funny that both happened at the same time. But, I was exhausted. I remember a few moments of that overtime. The first one was, I think it was the third or fourth overtime. There was a wraparound play, and I didn't even I couldn't even slide over to my post. I just like fell down and put my leg out, and for some miracle, like it didn't go in. And then the other one is, I remember after the game, as soon as I got into the training room, I just like pretty much like collapsed on the medical table, and I was just waiting to get some IVs in me. That was I honestly don't think I could do that. If it were to happen today, it takes a lot out of you to play that much hockey. You know, when you're younger, it's a bit easier. But nowadays, I don't know if I could do it.
How much? Now's a good time to ask. How much longer do you envision yourself playing?
You know what? I don't know. I'd love to play as long as I could. To be honest with you, I think. I love the game. You know, I still enjoy it. I still feel that when I'm playing my best hockey, I could play at a high level. You know, the only concern is health wise. Obviously, that's going to be the main key for me. I mean, obviously, I've had some hip issues over the last year and a half, and wasn't able to finish the season, so that was disappointing for me. And just trying to get healthy again, and hopefully get past it. And if I can do that and get on top of it and make sure that that's not an issue going forward, yeah, I mean, I'd love to play as long as I could and then maybe sign a contract extension like Yager at 45.
Oh, yeah. Nice being easily the second, third oldest player on the team because Sean Thornton was with you guys this year, so it wasn't even the second, right?
I know, so it made me feel young, but now that Thornton's retired, and I don't know if Yager's coming back or not yet, but I might have to step into that role, which I won't be too happy about.
I felt like, God, there might have been a point, Roberto, along late February, early March, and all you guys were getting healthy again, you know, the wins were starting to pile up, and the threat you guys were in the playoffs last year, I remember saying on the radio, you were the team that you wouldn't want to play in the East, but Ekblad got hurt. It was tough for you. There were a couple other guys that struggled staying healthy. I mean, sometimes that just happens. Sometimes it all comes together and it goes well, and sometimes four bad things happen at the same time. It felt like that with you guys. Once you started winning, it just couldn't sustain, right?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a weird season. I mean, we had some major injuries in the first half, as you guys know, and then once we got healthy, we went on that West Coast road trip where we swept all five games, like California, the whole deal. So coming back from that, we were feeling pretty good about ourselves. And I think we had the seven of the next eight games at home, and we were a healthy team at that point, and we didn't get the job done for one reason or another. And that was really the backbreaker for our club. And once we, you know, we didn't get the job done there, and we're trying to climb back into it, then, you know, injuries started to occur again. And that, by that time, it was a little too late for our club. So I don't think injuries is to blame. I think we were right there when we were healthy, and we just didn't get the job done. So, you know, every club goes through injuries. It's part of the league nowadays, and the NHL, and the good teams find a way to survive, and guys step in and play big minutes and do a job. And for some reason, we missed a little bit of that this year, and it hurt us.
In the race to the playoffs, there were so many teams, especially in the East, jockeying for playoff position. And I think parity is something that, say, right now in the NBA playoffs, there isn't a lot of. You kind of know who's going to win each series really up until the final. Of all your years playing, do you think it's the most even right now in the NHL?
For sure. I think if you just look at our division, I mean, last season, you know, we had Buffalo and Toronto that were kind of, you know, not in the mix. Montreal had a bunch of injuries, kind of out of it. So, you know, those are 3-4 teams running the division that, you know, on most nights it would give us, you know, 1 or 2 points almost every night. And then this year comes around, and, you know, Toronto's a strong team. Buffalo turned it up. Montreal is, you know, at the top of the division. And now every team in our division is a tough game, and wins are harder to come by. So, in situations like that, I think it evened out for our club a bit more, and it kind of hurt us as far as getting those, you know, 5-10 points that we had at the end of the year.
So he's a division rival, and he's your Olympic teammate. You won gold on as a starter in 10 and backing Carey Price up in 14. He's kind of coming into a year where it's sort of like you were in your last year in Florida. Like it's he's happy, he's comfortable, they love him there. But he, you know, you had to decide, you know, do I stay somewhere where I'm comfortable, life is great, things are wonderful, or do I make this? Do I approve of this push to maybe get me closer to being a young on a young team that can go far in the playoffs? Not that you can advise Carey Price, but you can relate to what he might go through in the last year of his deal, couldn't you?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, when I was with Florida, we hadn't made the playoffs any of the seasons I was there. So it was a bit of a different situation. I mean, Carey's been, you know, in the playoffs this year. They won the division, and, you know, they were one of the contenders in the East. So the difference is Carey Price can make a team on his own. He doesn't need anybody else to help him, and he's that type of difference maker. So it's really up to him what he wants to do. I think, you know, Montreal is a great city and great fans, and it's a great place to play hockey. So, you know, it's going to be a personal decision, and obviously he's the only one that can decide what he wants to do.
Is he the best goalie in the world in your eyes right now? And if not, who is?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the best goalie, you know, if you look at, you know, not just this season, but as a whole over the last 3-4 years, you know, I don't think anybody really comes close. Obviously, some guys had, you know, a bit better years, I think, than him this year. But, you know, as a whole, if I had to pick one guy, it would definitely be Carey Price.
How's goaltending changed maybe since you started in the league to now? Does it look different in your eyes?
For sure, 100%. I mean, if I still played the way I did when I came in the league, I wouldn't be in the NHL anymore. I would say that. I think the game has evolved so much more technical now, and so many different things you can utilize for specific plays that they really didn't exist when I came in. And you have to evolve with the times. I mean, a lot of goalies sometimes are set in their ways, and they don't want to, you know, learn new techniques and think they're fine the way they are. And that's when, you know, you see them, that they're out of the league after a few years. And myself, I always enjoy the game, the position itself. I'm always a student of the position, and I always want to get better and learn new things to help me improve. And I think that's what's really kept me going all these years. And, you know, I think goaltending is the most important position on any team. I don't care what anybody says. You know, it can be a difference. Just one save can make a difference between a win and a loss. So I don't know of any other position that can do that.
You'll laugh at this, but so many people made a big deal about Henrik Lundqvist and how expressive he is. I watch a lot of soccer, so you see soccer goalies, and they're like, they scream and yell at their players and hockey is not really like that. But he communicates, and he had an exchange with Derek Stepan, and I thought, I guess we're in the media, but I thought the media made way too much of it. I'm thinking, yeah. I'd want a goalie to talk to me if I'm a defenseman. If I'm a goalie, I don't mind if forwards and defensemen talk to me. Where do you sort of lay? I figure there's so much more conversation out there than the average fan picks up on, because if it wasn't, you wouldn't be as good.
Well, for sure. I think it's huge. I mean, I'm always talking in my crease. It's, you know, it's important, especially, you know, just to help each other out there and be each other's eyes sometimes when, you know, things are developing that you can't see. You know, I think I didn't see that play in particular. I don't know exactly what that play was about. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, you don't want the goalie to embarrass the player on the ice. That's what it all comes down to. And sometimes as a goalie, it gets frustrating to see certain things, but, you know, we all make mistakes, and sometimes we're at fault as well. So you always got to keep that in the back of your mind, that even though some guys make mistakes, sometimes you make a mistake and they're going to bail you out. So it's important to not embarrass anybody out there. I mean, if you want to take them aside afterwards in the locker room or whatnot, I think that's the best way to do it.
After the career you've had up until now and all your time in Vancouver and the cup run in 2011 and the departure from Vancouver, are you just kind of nice and settled now at this point in your career in Florida? And maybe do you enjoy a bit of anonymity for the first time in your career when you just go out for dinner?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's pros and cons to both situations, right? I think, you know, sometimes it is nice to just go out and do my thing and go to dinner and be with my family and then just be able to go home. But, you know, the other time, it's also nice sometimes to get that recognition that people, you know, they see you and you know, they treat you like who knows what. But I think, you know, there's good and bad things about both things. And at the end of the day, I think it's more about playing hockey and being on a team that gives you a chance to win. And, you know, I think last year, obviously, we had a great season and we were right in the thick of things. This year, we took a little bit of a step back, which was a big disappointment. But, you know, hopefully heading into next year, we can go back to where we were and be in contention, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's why I came back.
You don't know who your coach is yet. Is that intriguing to you? Will you sort do you, that? Is that, I mean, it's one thing to sort of watch the rumor mill about who it might be, who's interviewing, who's not. I mean, that'd be something you're obviously really curious about, right?
Of course. I mean, it's part of, you know, the part of the team and huge part of, you know, where we're going to be headed. So, obviously, I'm not involved in the decision-making, but I definitely want to keep a close eye on it and, you know, see who comes aboard and how they can help us.
Ben, do you want to go into coaching or management one day?
Not coaching. I think I'm very interested by management. You know, it's something that I've always enjoyed. As far as, you know, managing teams, trades, all that kind of stuff, I think it's fun and it's something that I would enjoy doing. But that being said, I mean, who knows what the future holds. Right now, I really want to stay focused on trying to play as long as I could, because I don't want to let go of that dream just quite yet.
Well, fifth in all-time wins, one of the all-time greats, a two-time gold medal winner for Team Canada. We hope you have a great summer. We hope the news treats you well with Florida and the coach and Jaromir Jagr. And I know you can't wait to – I know you're busy being a dad. You're getting a glimpse of retirement right now as a full-time dad. You're like, when's training camp start after a few weeks, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's why you want to keep playing, right? You want to keep doing what you do. But, no, but, you know, at the end of the day, being a dad is pretty cool. My little guy has started playing hockey this year, so it's been fun to bring him to the rink and watch him play and live a little bit of the hockey through him as well.
It is the best. Hey, we can't thank you enough for doing this. A lot of folks are going to really enjoy hearing from you. Thanks for taking the time, and have a great summer.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks so much.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
We're going to have to go and try and find his star on the Walk of Fame.
I wanted him to know more. So you want to lighten up the mood right away and be like, why aren't you in the playoffs? But then you ask him something light, and then you're like, I've never been there, and I am not sure how it all happened. But he's in. I mean, I can't be in the Italian Walk of Fame.
You're not Italian.
Not an inch, not a percentage, nothing, zero. But he is.
I was also thinking with the coaching situation, at least John Tortorella, he's in Columbus, so Luongo won't have to worry about
feel
that.
Feel safe. So, I mean, you're in that city when all that goes down with the Corey Schneider trade and the Winter Classic, and like I think people look, and it's hard to argue Mike Gillis didn't do really good things there, And at the same time, you've got these two prize assets, Luongo and Schneider, and not the Bo Horvat's not a good player, but you basically, they both end up seeming slightly mismanaged. I don't know which one was mismanaged more, because to me, if you're trading Schneider, you got to keep Luongo happy. He can't want to leave then at that point. And if you're trading Luongo, which was so hard to do, then you're not trading Schneider. So you should have ended up with one, not zero, at the end of the day. That's the whole point.
And for Gillis, for all the great things he did to get them to the Cup final in 2011, I mean, in broadcasting, as we say, you're only as good as your last show. For an athlete, you're only good as your last game. And for Gillis, it was kind of, well, people remember you for how it all ended with the chance trying to get him out of town.
And think about this. Corey Schneider has played now 4 years in New Jersey, and he hasn't played a playoff game. Like, he's Roberto Luongo in Florida before he went to Vancouver. He's had really good seasons. This one was not as good as the year before, but he can't, you know, he can't sniff the playoffs. Like, we had a bunch of time with Roberto, but I would have said to him also, his resume speaks for itself, and you could count on him being one of the top goalies every year. It feels like, Carolyn, it's harder and harder to guess, outside of Carey Price, who he mentioned, it's harder and harder to guess at guys that are going to be really consistent. Some really good goalies miss the playoffs every single year. I mean, even right now, Braden Holtby is, we don't even give it a second thought that he's the second best Canadian-born goalie. And he looked a little rattled at times in the Toronto series. And obviously, you know, getting even to Game 7 with Pittsburgh, there haven't been beautiful moment. And yet you don't, if they make it through Pittsburgh, you don't even hesitate in thinking he'll be fine and he could win eight more games. You don't.
Yeah. No, the positions really change. So we've been so focused on the NHL playoffs, but last week in the series against the Boston Red Sox, the Orioles' Adam Jones, he was doing his job on the field and he gets a bag of peanuts thrown his way. And included with that were racial slurs. And this story just took over. I mean, that entire series was nuts with the pitching. Manny Machado was livid. But the big story was Adam Jones and the racism that came along with it. And it just brings up the topic again that this is not a baseball problem. This is not a sports problem. This is a cultural problem that is just rearing its ugly head.
Yeah, I feel, I mean, I got a whole separate concept of heckling at sporting events. And I don't know if it's because I'm older. I don't know if it's because now I go with either people who are like, I don't want to hear really disgusting heckling with and racism, I suppose, takes it to a new level. But it let's face it. We all know that, say, a homophobic heckle 10 years ago, we didn't react the same way. And we should have. We all should have, you know, been more proactive about stopping that stuff when we heard it. That said, the Boston thing's another whole story. We got to remember where Adam Jones was last October, where he's in the outfield in the wild card game here in Toronto. And it's not even like, did they or didn't they heckle him? A beer can doesn't fly out of someone's hand without it being propelled. It almost hits Hyun-Soo Kim, who Adam Jones is converging on to make the play. He catches the ball anyway. And this is I forgot when this was. I had to look it up. The bottom of the seventh in a 2-2 game. Imagine if that ball drops.
Right.
And you're the umpire. I mean, you didn't have to make a call if you're the umpire. But what do you do a year after fans pelted the field in the bat flip game with the Russ Martin ball hitting the bat of Shin Soo-Chu? I got to get all my names right. But either way, it's I felt like I could sort of say something about it. And yet at the same time, I don't feel nothing you say. It just sounds like the most obvious thing. That's wrong. But then if it is, how do we police it? How do we stop it? How do you, yes, you can escort a guy out or a woman out who's said something racist out loud in the crowd. But what if I overhear it in a conversation and I'm offended by it?
I think
I don't know where the line is.
See, I think you speak out. And what was nice to see is in the second game of this series, because it happened in game one, when Adam Jones came up to bat, Fenway got on their feet. They were applauding him and they weren't cheering for Adam Jones, the player. They weren't cheering for the Orioles. They were kind of cheering for acceptance and intelligence over ignorance. But the thing is, for people in the section of that heckler, say something.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you always worry, how can someone react? Will they lash out? But and it's the same as what you said with hecklers. And you see kids around at baseball games and hockey games, and they're parents are yelling, "You suck," and
yeah, like I think you can overplay the role model thing,
because
we all have our flaws and we all make our mistakes and we all have bad days, but it's there are good examples and terrible examples of just how to behave in public, and when it's passed on that way, I guess it's not. I want to think that it's not as bad as it used to be, and that just really vile crowd behavior gets called on more often than it used to. And it obviously goes, here's what it does also, Carolyn, it goes viral a lot more than it used to.
Right. So we hear about it more.
Yeah. Like there was I saw a viral clip of a woman at a Trader Joe's in Tennessee. Now I'm inflicting terrible things on the state of Tennessee. I apologize, Nashville, and Memphis. But she was in an argument with a Muslim woman in line, and the Muslim woman just started recording her. And she was saying, you know, go back to your own country. Obama's not the president anymore. And you're going, well, I wouldn't know about this. And then it would have been a she said, she said a decade ago. But here's the evidence. And this woman, if you live on her street, if her kids go to your kid's school, like there's nowhere to hide now, basically. And
right.
That's good.
Yes.
That's really good.
It's called accountability.
Yeah. And it wasn't happening before. And that said, I never feel like I can say enough, and I do feel like social media almost propels people to be like I could retweet a story about Ray Rice, and I could be like, you should never beat women, and people would like it and retweet it, and I'm like, yes. Like, it's just, you can be the most obvious sort of, as they say, social justice warrior, and I could tell somebody, well, yes, this is how Adam Jones should feel, and a black friend of mine might say, you kind of get it, but you don't, because it's, we all have our individual, someone could be, I could say to you, hey, don't let anyone on Twitter bother you. And you could say, you're not a woman. And I would also understand that and go, yes, your experience is more unique than mine, maybe in terms of what you can put up with and what you can't, I suppose.
Right. And I don't think it's about being preachy. I think it's just about if you see something that's wrong and people saying bad things about others, that it just opens up the conversation.
Yeah, it's, but
you don't have to go on Twitter and be preachy and say, I know what to do, and you don't.
No, just... it is odd, though, because when I think about Boston and the times I've been there, I know that rep sort of hangs over the city a little bit, yet it's a really educated city. It's a really liberal city.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans aren't gonna get elected en masse there. And I don't want to imply Republicans are more likely to shout something racist at a Baltimore Orioles outfielder, but it's like when you hear a news story and you play guess the state. Well, unfortunately, a lot of major leaguers said, racial incident. It's probably Boston, and it's been like that since the '60s and '70s, since they integrated. Right. Since way after Jackie Robinson, way after, Frank Robinson, way after players that were playing in the 50s, 60s and 70s, Boston was one of the last teams to kind of look and sign black free agents and say, we don't care about color. We're going to add the best players we can to our team.
This is something we should bring up with our next guest.
We could do that. Sports Illustrated's Richard Deitch is a well-known, and I use that term loosely, personality on SI.com. Has his own podcast. We'll talk about that. And, of course, is often featured on Bob McCown's show, Primetime Sports, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Can I ask you guys, what do you hope to gain from this podcast? What do you want listeners to
monetization, Richard.
Oh, yes, I understand that, Greg. Carolyn, of
course, a
little
extra on the side.
Carolyn's aspiring to art, Greg. You're all about the commerce. But I might even invest in your podcast. I just want to know, if I invest, what am I going to get every week?
No, indecision. I think you're getting, but I think what I can't do and what I do to some extent is, I mean, we could have an amazing guest. We could have Wayne Gretzky on tomorrow morning on Brady and Price, and we've either got to tell him that we got to either cut format and do 8 minutes or 9 minutes with him and then say, Wayne, can you hang on for a traffic update and a sports update?
Mm-hmm.
Not that those things aren't important. We have to have those. Carolyn would say the same. You can't bust up a sports cast with people needing highlights, needing information, needing analysis. So this lets us flesh things out quite a bit more than we're probably able to do. I mean, we were both super excited about it. We're not showing it, but we are.
No, and it's also about having conversations, too. I mean, in what I do, because it's a sports highlight show, the longest interview you have is 3 minutes, and there always has to be a very clear purpose. So it's basically three questions, get what you need. There's no natural flow of conversation.
Well, that's interesting in that it's interesting to me, Greg, because in my country, if you think you feel a little constricted in the amount of time you have to interview a guest, and obviously Carolyn does. I mean, 3 minutes is 3 minutes. But in Canadian sports talk, you actually get far longer than you do in American sports radio, which a lot of times is like 6 or 7 minute segment at best, intro, outro, and you're really just basically – you're almost trying to maybe get some kind of quick take out of the guest, and then you move on to different spots. That's one of the great things about being on with McCown or Blair, is that a lot of times, you know, you get 13, 14 minutes to talk, which is almost unheard of in North America. But the one thing I've loved about the podcast form is that, you know, if you want to go with somebody for 2 hours, you can go. If you want to go with somebody for 40 minutes, you could go. And because of the Sportsnet brand, and because obviously both of you guys are known throughout your country, you should almost be able to get anybody in sports, and you should be able to get them for an extended period of time, which could be really good. I mean, maybe Gretzky's not the best example because he's obviously the most famous guy in the country, but imagine getting him for like 90 minutes on hockey. That would be like – that'd be like taking like a graduate level seminar. That would be phenomenal.
Well, and I think in the case, say with Roberto Luongo this week or other athletes, I think I'd rather have 12 minutes than six, because I know you're not just looking for a canned answer, the canned cliches. Mm-hmm. You can flesh yourself out, like I said again, a little more than you're otherwise able to. You didn't mention as well, no names of shows, of course, but many shows in the States would have four product placement ads in the middle of that interview.
Right.
So you'd be hungry, you'd know where to buy your next car, and you'd know where to get a mortgage. I think all those things are vitally
and
important
beer.
In 2000. And beer also.
What beer
you,
to
yeah,
drink.
You could drink in your new house also.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's nothing like product endorsement when it comes to the States. That's one thing actually I like about the podcast form is that, yeah, you do have ads within it, but again, you can go 20 straight minutes, then you might have an ad for 2 or 3 minutes. A lot of the ads, at least we do here, are live reads, quote unquote live reads, even though it's taped, so you can sort of have fun with them. So I think you guys are going to like the format. Where it would strike me that you guys are going to have to sort of figure out is, one, you're both probably used to talking in your respective mediums. In the podcast form, you're going to have to give your guests far more of a leech, so you're going to have to learn how to shut up. It's very hard for me to do, but I've been working on that. And then what kind of chemistry you two have? Did you guys know each other before they put you two together?
More of each other, but just hours-wise and again, being away for a year. And the two – how would we put it, Carolyn? The radio and TV, you just live such different lives.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm in at night. You're in the morning.
And you can, like, think about this, Richard. I'm gone. I'll stick around pretty late, to be honest, to do some tapings or go do whatever. Do you think I ever see McCown? Not a chance. I mean, I saw him obviously at 1 o'clock when we let into him with the Brady and Walker show. But you just, there must be people at ESPN Radio, like, why would Ryan Russillo ever see Bomani Jones or something like that, right?
Right, they wouldn't. So basically, for you two, this is like a Hunger Games scenario. You both volunteer for tribute. Now you're together, basically.
Well, the thing is, because we've known each other for a while, and we both were wanting to do podcasts and kind of talking to our bosses about it. So it kind of just naturally fit that we'd try and do one together.
And she asked for McCown, and he won't do it for free. So here,
actually, I heard a rumor that Carolyn wanted Andrew Walker, but he was priced too high, and then eventually became Greg Brady.
That happens. Well, not actually height wise, but one of those strange things. So we were kicking around. We're going to get to talk about the hockey ratings, and I know you're I wouldn't even say you're a closet hockey fan, and for some strange reason, I feel like you're trying to keep your options open to either potentially run for office in Canada. You can't be prime minister, but you've adopted almost the Toronto Maple Leafs, probably much to the chagrin of your hometown Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah,
if you picked an Atlantic Division rival to sort of get behind, we'll get to that. But we were kicking around the Adam Jones thing in Boston. I wanted to ask you, because you follow all the different coverage, you'd follow people who work in sports radio and TV. So when this happens, and people really dug in on Boston, but what I found interesting was a lot of the hosts on the Boston, and I know a lot of them are pretty opinionated, some of the opinions of some of the guys.
Pretty opinionated. But
I was going to say, some of the opinions are kind of archaic, but it's also a scenario where I understand picking up for your home city. It's a tricky game to say, yeah, we've got a few bad apples here, and it does happen here more often, and we need to do something about it, as opposed to, well, prove it happened. Like, those that swings, again, I'll use the phrase swings the pendulum. how did you view it? Like, from a national story, it was kind of, it kind of took all the headlines in a week where there's NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs. We're all talking about racism and Adam Jones and Fenway Park.
All right, well, a couple of things here. First off, Boston is among the most provincial cities in America when it comes to sports. So I think a lot of the de facto or default position for people in the sports media will be to defend Boston above all. So, I mean, I understand that thinking. And then when it gets to the sports talk host, that kind of thinking is sort of that thinking on steroids, and that's where you, where they come out on the Adam Jones stuff. The one thing about that story that I think gave it far more legitimacy was that immediately after Adam Jones said what he did, you heard from other prominent African-American players in baseball, particularly CeCe Sabathia, who was asked by Yankee beat reporters, you know, what does he know about this? And he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but that all of us, meaning all the African-American ballplayers, know what we have to face when we go to Boston. So that's a guy who's very respected in the game. He's been around for a long time. If he says that, to me, you know, that backs up what Adam Jones said, not to mention the fact that Adam Jones's reputation is sterling in baseball. He's always been a stand-up guy. He's been great with the media. He's honest. He is not a guy who has any kind of track record of saying something that is not true. So, one, I certainly believe it happened. But, yeah, you have to sort of be measured in the fact that it doesn't castigate an entire city for being racist. It just castigates what happened in that park that day. And the Red Sox should figure out what to do to make sure that doesn't happen again. In terms of why it went national, Greg Cowan, I would just say we're talking about an all-star caliber player. We're talking about a city that has had some racial issues when it comes to sports in the past. And nothing today in terms of the issues of race, in terms of gender politics, et cetera, when it's somebody well-known is involved in that, that story always becomes national. We live in a social media society. The second people start talking about that, it becomes a national story just because of the mediums that exist today.
Well, and I thought it was interesting that some articles, some of the coverage said, okay, the issues at Fenway, the issues in sports, the issue is with hecklers in general. But is that just ignoring the fact that it is a deeper cultural issue?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I that gets into the larger question of sort of race and athletics, and one that's beyond and bigger than what happened at Fenway. You look in Europe, of course, and this is really where it plays out prominently. Look how many times Africans, not African Americans in this case, but African players or players of African origins play in Europe, and what the overt racism that they have to deal with, people in the crowd mimicking like ape sounds, people in the crowd throwing out you know, bananas and other like horrific racial stereotypes. So that exists. That exists in sports. It feels, or it strikes me, that it's gotten better since, you know, the 60s and 70s and 80s. But I think, I mean, racism exists in society, and it clearly extends when it comes to people watching games. The interesting there is that it's also one of the places in society where meritocracy often does rule. It's one of the places where in society where, you know, you can make the argument that at times it is colorless. You know, whether you're rooting for a team, you're not rooting for the skin color of people. You're rooting for the fact that they're on a team. And then obviously within a team framework, it's one of the places where people of different races, ethnicities, and religions actually mix and forge towards one common goal. But it's, you know, race is the great story in my country. It has existed for hundreds of years. It's the story of America. It's not going away. I imagine it has certainly similar parts in Canada, but, you know, the history of America is wrapped up in the history of race, and that I believe that will never change, quite frankly, generations, hundreds of years from now. You hope that all of us, you know, it's a pie-in-the-sky notion, but you hope that at a certain point we have a post-racial society. But I'm not sure that's going to exist, at least in my lifetime.
I can't tell if I'm more influenced by American culture. And I worked in a city where you talk about race a lot, like Detroit, for 9 years.
Yep.
So you end up. But I mean, I consumed, I don't know a Canadian that wasn't consuming that, like the O.J. miniseries in the summer, or just the 25 year anniversary of the Rodney King thing. Mm-hmm. Like all of us who were alive then like I couldn't take my eyes off the coverage and the you know the 25 year anniversary stuff last week of it. And yet you're right, from Toronto, which feels like a melting pot, and I'm well aware. It's, look at me, white guy saying this, so it doesn't seem to count in 2017. I'm like, it feels so far away, and yet it's right on our doorstep all the time.
Well, you're in a city, at least to me, that it's not perfect, and there's obviously racial issues in Toronto. I don't claim to be a Toronto expert. Mm-hmm. I've obviously been there many times. I don't live there. You guys are closer to it than me. But I feel like you are closer to the kind of society that we should try to emulate than most of the big cities in the States. You walk down the streets of Toronto, and it really does feel like you're at the UN. You see people of different races, different ethnicities, clearly different religions. I remember walking close to your station at Rogers. I should remember the street. No, but I walked down a street where there was a school there, and the thing that was just like fascinating to me was I saw these kids. They're probably like 10 years old. They're like 50 of them. They were all playing together in the schoolyard, and they were of different religions playing together. There were little girls with headscarves playing with clearly like kids who looked like you know, straight out of like the Sidney Crosby, like J. Crew catalog. And it was just cool. I mean, yeah, it was pie in the sky and idyllic, but it was great to see like these little kids, clearly different religions, clearly different parents, clearly different backgrounds, playing together in one schoolyard. That to me strikes me as kind of what ideally you'd want. And one of the reasons I've always loved covering the Olympics is there are moments where, you know, you can be in some like main square somewhere and you see people from all over the world interacting and talking, and whatever their differences are get blown out of the water. And, you know, again, it's sort of idealism, but that's, you know, that gives you a sense of what things can be.
Should be.
The reality is things are not that.
Richard Deitch is our guest from Sports Illustrated. Let me ask you about Stanley Cup playoffs for NBC Sports Network. Right now, as we speak, the Edmonton Oilers are headed to a Game 7. The Ottawa Senators have a one-game lead and could get to a semifinal. Now, 9 of the last 10 finals have featured an All-American matchup, and I can tell you, I did research for this, 6 of 7 Final Fours have been All-American teams as well. So they came out of the lockout. You know how I know the NHL can't overtly influence the results? They come out of a lockout for an entire year, Richard, and their first two finals are Carolina against Edmonton and Anaheim against Ottawa. I don't feel like there's a lot of overt influence by Gary Bettman to get the Stanley Cup final that he wants. But then they got some real great matchups, right? Detroit-Pittsburgh 2 years in a row was great. Chicago-Philly. Boston's there a couple of years. Boston against Chicago broke all sorts of records. How much, because we think of hockey and we know it is, Carol and I were talking about this, a regional sport. It did huge numbers Saturday's game in Pittsburgh for the possible clincher against Washington. How much in America does that actual final matchup matter? Or are hockey fans just hockey fans? And you might get some periphery eyes on the original six teams and the Pittsburghs and Washingtons. But, I mean, is a Nashville final against the Ottawa Senators utterly disastrous for NBC?
Yes. It is utterly disastrous. I mean, the reality is that for a national final for NBC, you have to have one of the big teams in order to get some kind of weight in the ratings. There's a reason why Chicago has always done great, and I have no doubt that NBC, you know, secretly always roots for a team like the Blackhawks to get to the finals. The Rangers would do pretty well, too, given it's New York, big market, and a team that might attract some eyeballs nationally. The Capitals-Penguins game after the Kentucky Derby was one of the biggest games that NBC has had in a long time. Now, obviously, had a great lead-in from the Derby, but those are two U.S.-based teams, two of the biggest stars in the game in Ovechkin and Crosby. So that's a team, that's a series, I should say, that can get you some crossover. But, Greg, if you look at the history of NHL Stanley Cup final ratings, talking about the final, you have to have a big team in there in order to get any kind of national traction. So while you could have the, like, let's put it this way. Let's say the Preds and the Oilers make the Western Conference final. That's a great Western Conference final in terms of quality of play, in terms of storyline. I mean, man, Connor McDavid with a chance to get to the Stanley Cup final is pretty incredible. PK Subban on Nashville, totally, like, you know, a player that, like, is really interesting. But that's not going to do well in the States. I'll be very blunt. Nashville's a small market and an emerging hockey market with not a ton of audience yet. And Edmonton, you're not getting any rating if you're NBC because it's a Canadian team. And they have not, in my opinion, marketed Connor McDavid enough where the casual sports fan is going to know, I got to tune in and see this kid who may be the next Crosby or the next Gretzky. You then look at the Eastern Conference, my God. I mean, if Ottawa somehow gets through into the Stanley Cup Final, they're, you know, I am a hockey fan, so I will watch the Stanley Cup Final no matter what. But if it's Ottawa versus either Edmonton or Ottawa versus Nashville, NBC's done. I mean, it'll be... It may not be the lowest rating on record, but it'll be one of the it will be one of the three lowest, which is a shame, but that's just the reality. And in order to get big ratings in the States in the final, you have to have a Chicago, a Philly, a Boston, or a New York, or it's not going to happen. It's a regional sport.
So how do you try and not make it regional? How do you try and make it national in the States? Do you grow the game at a grassroots level and try and raise American stars like Austin Matthews? Do you promote them? Do you promote maybe just as many West Coast games on the national level as you do on the East?
To me, the only way you can do it, and again, it's not, they've tried to do this and they have to continue to try to do this, it's not easy. I think you have to work with your partners to bite the bullet on some regular season ratings to promote the great young players like Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. So when it comes to the playoffs, people are educated on how great these players are and that you can get better ratings come playoff time for the Torontos and Edmontons because you are losing a market if you are an American television audience because those fans watching in those cities don't rate for you. So that's what I would do. I think baseball has finally woken up and decided to promote individuals. That's where the NBA has been genius for 30 years. It was never the Bulls versus the Suns. It was watch Barkley versus Jordan. It's not, hey, check out the Cavs Warriors. It's LeBron versus Durant, LeBron versus Curry. And that, I think, is what the NHL has to do. They have to – the regional people are always going to watch the game. But in order to get national, they have to promote Matthews versus McDavid, Eichel versus Matthews. And they have to promote the hell out of that through marketing. And they have to tell their partners, in this case NBC Sports Network, that you got to – you know, you have to put some of these teams in Canada or on in the West – or from Western Canada – in better time slots because it's inevitably going to pay off for you down the road. Because if I live in New York, and if I only see Connor McDavid two or three times a year, if I'm just a casual hockey fan or, let's say, a casual sports fan, I'm not going to get excited that this guy's in the Western Conference Final. But if I've seen him 7, 8, 9, 10 times and I see this guy's a transcendent player, well, I'm going to tune in to Edmonton versus Nashville because, like, that to me is like destination viewing in the way the NBA has become destination viewing when it's Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry or Kawhi Leonard versus Kevin Durant. To me, that's, again, they're never going to get the numbers the NBA gets, college football gets, or the NFL gets. Hockey just has to be realistic. But I do think there is a path to get higher ratings because, to me, they have these transcendent stars in the sport who are under 25. So I would just market the hell out of them, and I would try to make every – marketing vehicle or marketing attempt, player versus player, as opposed to team versus team.
Yeah, I feel like there's a window just in the last 10 years where you and I should be in on these marketing meetings because I understand there's free bagels and coffee, but also I would have said this about, say, like the Tampa Bay Lightning when they drafted Steven Stamkos. So then it turns out they get good, but you haven't ever put a Tampa game on a Sunday afternoon. And like you said,
correct,
bit the bullet and say, why don't we have them coming into Madison Square Garden or Joe Louis Arena? The LA Kings, right? There's two Stanley Cup champion teams. You got an American goalie in Jonathan Quick who started at the Olympics. You got Drew Doughty. You got, at the time you had Kopitar, Jeff Carter, Mike Richards. There's a way to mark, and they never put LA. So I always figure I must be the dumb one and they must know what they're doing, putting the same seven teams on, which you wouldn't see in the NFL. Yes, there's three primetime opportunities. So everybody, if you want to see Blake Bortles in primetime, you'll get your shot once or twice a year. But it just feels like NBC says, like, you could guess. If I tell you there's an NBC game at 12:30, Richard, you'll have the matchup within five guesses. You'll know. You'll know it's Hawks, Red Wings, Bruins, Capitals, Capitals, Penguins, Penguins, Red Wings. You'll know. You'll know who's on. You will.
So what is it? Kind of the chicken or egg where they figure, well, they won't care about this market team, so we won't show them. And it's kind of, well, if you don't show them, people won't care.
Well, ultimately it's a business, and I understand you got to get ratings. You're promising sponsors a certain number, but what's frustrating sometimes about hockey is they're not the NFL. They're not the NBA. They're coming from such a smaller base. But what they have in terms of an asset at the moment is they have some transcendent players in the league who are young. That is a dream for most sports. And to me, you have to overmarket the great young players in your league right now in order to hopefully set up 3 or 4 years from now, bringing in more casual fans under the tent, and hopefully then those casual fans stick around. Somebody like Elliot Friedman would know. Yeah. Well, somebody like Elliot Friedman would know better than me in terms of like who are the great 16, 15, 17 year old players. But it strikes me that like Crosby, Ovechkin, the NHL has two guys in Matthews and McDavid who are transcendent figures. And if they don't take advantage of promoting those two, it's totally on them. You do not often get this in your sport. And they have an opportunity now with these two guys to promote two players who just even the most casual hockey fan can sort of understand that they are something different or something like once in a generation.
And you'll laugh at remembering this, but you remember when the NHL used to be on USA Network?
I do.
And Wayne Gretzky was, like, you could find Edmonton Oilers games pretty consistently on USA, and this is before they were even really good. Like, they knew what Gretzky was right out of the gate, and they put him on. So they're like, when he's in Madison Square Garden, we show him. When he's in St. Louis, we show him. When he's in Detroit, we show him. And it worked because then everybody knew and actually when they start getting to Stanley Cup finals, people have a familiarity with the Oilers. And yes, he's hosting Saturday Night Live or he's on Young and the Red. Austin Matthews isn't going to host Saturday Night Live anytime soon. We can barely get it. You couldn't barely get an NBA player on there, outside of Jordan and Barkley. I can't think of LeBron's done it, but they haven't exactly invited Steph Curry or Kevin Durant to do it. So we had a different era then, but the premise is basically the same, right?
Right. Again, the reason why the NBA is such compelling theater, on top of the fact that the athletes are great and the game is above the rim, is that you know, like when you say Westbrook, like something comes to mind: triple double, fashion forward, gonna say sort of whatever he thinks, hates Durant at the moment, LeBron, greatest of all time, maybe chasing Jordan. Like, things sort of come up with, like, we know these guys in the way we know actors, artists, et cetera. And that's why the league is great, because, like, the league is about personalities and narrative. The problem with the NHL, when it comes to bringing more people in, I get it. It's the whole, there's a certain aesthetic, don't be bigger than the team. It's the whole Canadian, I feel like I should be having poutine right now and Tim Hortons. I get it. It's the whole aesthetic. But that's not how you market a sport. If you market a sport, we need to kind of know, like, what Austin Matthews likes to do away from the rink. Like, I want to know what Connor McDavid's, like, favorite album is, or, like, what other players in the league he thinks are great. That's how you get people invested in the sport. That's why the NBA is so great. It's like a soap opera every day. The NFL doesn't need to do that because the NFL – is far and away the most popular sport in North America. Maybe it's something to do with, like, the violence of the sport, and we're all inherently attracted to violence. But hockey doesn't benefit from any of this stuff. Hockey has to make its own magic. So I'll be interested to see. I don't think it's a question of not having bright minds in the league office or at NBC. I think it's a question of a philosophical shift and how much marketing dollars are we going to put behind to see if we can promote these guys.
Mind you, that being said, how big of a hit is it for growing the game in the States that NHLers, as of now, won't be playing in next year's Olympics?
I think it's huge, although, Bob McCowan and Damian Cox told me I was an idiot when I said that, so maybe I should backtrack. But
We've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, yeah.
To me, that's the greatest marketing tool for professional hockey. The Olympic, having watched it live multiple times, it's far and away one of the great tournaments I've ever seen. It's hockey at its highest, best. It feels like it matters because they're playing for something beyond themselves. And so I think it inevitably hurts the sport when they're not there. I understand where the NHL's coming from. We don't make any money on this. We interrupt our season, blah, 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 blah. I could never understand why you would want to take away something aesthetically that makes your sport look so good, so cool, so important, even if you're not making a ton of money on it. But so I think it hurts it. I understand the argument against it. I think people will still obviously watch Olympic hockey because they'll root for the jersey as opposed to the player. But, man, like, the singular best thing about the Winter Olympics are the men's and women's hockey tournament. And I bet you I am not alone in thinking that.
But there's a young man out there waiting to be the next Jim Craig or Mike Ruzioni next year.
You
in,
play hockey,
South
Greg?
Korea. I'm not eligible.
No.
I'm not an American. Not an American.
Yeah, you can play,
right
now, play for the Canadian team.
And right now, there's a young man and woman waiting to be the next Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady in the podcast.
Are they enjoying it?
Thank you for the free podcast advice too. We weren't banking on that, so that's perfect.
I think it's paid. I think there's an invoice coming for the paid podcast advice.
You can send that to Greg. I think you have his email.
I might send that to Scott Moore. I'm going to go higher.
Well, yes. So, well, there's somebody who wants an Edmonton Ottawa final. So you stop with this Nashville stuff in the final.
This is a dream of all dreams for Rogers. You can't get enough Canadian teams.
They might as well throw
Hamilton in there. Just get some other cities that aren't even competing.
Yeah, I feel like people in Ottawa won't like it, but they've got the one with the least cachet in the Sens, but Canada's still Canada, and if they had an all-Canada final, but it's been close before, and it hasn't happened. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter, at Richard Deitch. He's a very intriguing follow. He says what he thinks. He thinks what he says. You're also on, oh my goodness, you're on Ross Tucker's football podcast this week.
I don't even remember that. I feel like that's a rerun. In fact, I did not do the Russ Tucker podcast this week. He's replaying this.
Oh, is it an old? Well, you're on with Frank Wycheck, so only one of you was on the field for the Music City Miracle, and it was indeed. I don't feel like you lateraled to anyone on that play against the Bills.
I did not. That was not me.
But thank you for doing this. People can hear you regularly on Bob McCown Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 4 o'clock. Like you said, these stretch out. We talk about 3-minute interviews. You get 7 of those stacked onto each other when you are on with Bob and Damian, right? It's like 21 minutes. Have you ever looked at your watch and you're like, I got to go. No more questions.
All right. Well, first of all, let's forget about me and let's end with this. Whatever you run of my interview, it has to be the last part of your podcast. It cannot be anywhere near the beginning because you have to have better guests. And then secondly, you should not be bringing me back for at least 100 episodes. You have so many other people to choose from, and I'd like to see you guys get more downloads. So that's the two things. One, make sure I'm third or fourth on this inaugural podcast. And then lastly, do not come back to me until episode 100 or 150.
I feel like 101 is. You said 100. Now it's at 150. In a minute from now, it'll be 200.
I feel like management is committed to you guys, so I feel like at least 100.
Well, listen. We'll see.
Do I have to spell out my history? Richard Deitch joining us from Sports Illustrated. He'll enjoy the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and no matter who plays in them, so he says. Thank you for doing this for us.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's so interesting hearing what is good for television in the U.S. when it comes to the NHL, because it's so different than what it's like here at home.
Well, look at the Raptors. I mean, we talked about them earlier in the show. They go out to Cleveland. I don't think ABC has ever contemplated a Toronto somebody NBA final.
Toronto, Utah.
Yeah, not really what they were, what was in the plans. So, and there have obviously been, like I said, I mean, if anybody thinks results get manipulated, just you're not coming out of an NHL lockout and saying, you know what, we really should organize a Carolina Edmonton final for the U.S. markets. It doesn't work that way. So it's really, it's interesting to hear that perspective. And yet, I think don't you think it's the original six teams, including Toronto and Montreal, that have that, they just got that cachet everywhere.
Yes.
You've been to the ACC and you've been to, Rogers Arena when the Rangers make their one visit, or especially with that Chicago-Vancouver rivalry and how it heated up playing, three seasons in a row, or was it 3 out of 4? And it just, you're always going to see Blackhawks sweaters there. You're always going to see Red Wing sweaters in
everywhere,
Toronto or Vancouver.
Everywhere you go, if there's those teams, you're going to see it.
Yeah, 100%. So we've got something. So you've heard from Roberto Luongo. You've heard from Richard Deitch from SI.com. And we thought, well, we can't go on forever. We both have real jobs. But we thought there must be things that will be like, damn it, how do we fit this in? And we've decided there is a way to do that. Correct?
Correct. In a segment called, what's your name for it? It's still developing.
Well, I'd like to call it That Caught Our Eye.
I like What Up With That.
Yeah, so that's what is happening. And
this is the music for it.
Could almost put a Twitter poll question out.
Sure.
and majority rules as to what we're going to end up calling it. But it's little slices of stories that we saw, and we either had you had an opinion, you're like, this is really interesting, and I said, no, it isn't. And then we decided, that's good, we disagree, we should talk about it, correct? Basically
correct.
Like that?
Okay, here's the first story that's okay. just really been bothering me. So Lonzo Ball, he has his new shoe, right? It's $495 American. Let me just remind you, he has never played in the NBA. He is not yet drafted into the NBA. And his helicopter parent, LeVar, says that it's a symbolic shoe. And when he was asked, how did you decide on $495? He just said, that seemed like it was its worth. So my question to you, Greg, is how much would you judge someone for buying these shoes?
Well, there would be judgment. Don't you often look around? I look around the ACC and see those courtside people. I mean, besides Drake. And I'm like, it's just more than I would spend on a tip. Sometimes, do you ever say, no matter how much money I made, I wouldn't spend X on Y, right?
Right.
Like, I got things that, like, do you ever see a man with, like, and he's like, it's a $3,000 watch. Like, I'm not a Rolex guy. There's nothing. I almost get a car because it takes you from point A to point B, and it looks really good passing you. But a watch, sunglasses, I can't tell the difference. And I'm like, are you like that with wine? I'm utterly confused between a $20 bottle and a $500 bottle. I'm
not getting into this stuff. Actually, there's this app I use called Vino, and you take a picture of the wine, and it tells you how much it should cost. We're kind of getting off topic. It's a great app. But courtside, when I was a kid, I remember I was going with my dad, and we bought a lotto ticket, and I was very excited. And my dad said, okay, if we win this $10 million, what do you want? And he was probably expecting, oh, I want to go on a trip or blah, blah. I said, courtside tickets at a Raptors game. And he said, I promise you, if we win the lottery, I will give that to you. Because then he thought, great, I don't have to give her anything else.
And would this have been the Damon Stoudemire, Doug Christie era? Or was this Vince Carter? Or was
Alvin Williams years.
Alvin Williams, okay.
Sportsnet commentator, analyst.
So I think...
He never won the lottery. I've never sat courtside.
No, not yet. And no. It's coming. That day is
coming.
Yeah,
keep buying tickets.
And the $495... See, I feel
American.
Like, right. We're taking a negative... It's too much. It's a bit ridiculous. His comments are worse than making his own shoe.
That's true.
But I did see the, like, it's not in the headline, but it's the Ball family cleared over $156,000 on its first day of business. And you're talking about it, and I'm talking about it, and other people might talk about it. So doesn't he win if we're talking about it in a weird way? They're like, oh, those greedy bastards, that Ball family. What I feel bad for is the kid a little bit.
And agreed.
I feel like this guy has been a really good dad. A, he's been there. B, he's been supportive. And I know as a dad, a little pressure. Your parents probably put some pressure on you. You couldn't have come home from Western with 58s on your on your transcripts. Pressure externally.
Yeah,
to
but
do
they
well
weren't helicopter parents.
Well, they can't.
I mean, he is involved.
But I wonder, when he gets to the NBA, I think it might, I really do believe, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I shouldn't because
no.
I didn't think these shoes would be this ridiculous. So when a team drafts him next year, let's say it's the Celtics. Let's say they're second overall and they take Lonzo Ball. I don't feel like LeVar Ball is showing up at practice scripting plays. And
no,
this is what
but
he
I
was
think,
trying to do in college and definitely did in high school.
I think he'll be close by. I think you're right. I think I'm losing sight of what I'm actually upset about. I don't think it's actually the shoes. I think it's LeVar and all the Jordan talk and LeBron and talking about LeBron's son. So
quickly, what most you've ever paid for, would it be a tennis shoe? Would it be
a running
cross
shoe?
Trainer?
I don't think I've ever paid more. Aren't running shoes between $100 and $200? I don't think I've ever paid more for a running shoe than...
But I kind of even flinch at $100. And I know there's people that go out and buy, like, the real marathon. I just run recreationally on the treadmill. But I do get a new pair of shoes every 7 months. And Mrs. Brady says, really? And I'm like, yes. My bad
you
knees.
You are supposed to, I've heard.
Bad knees. I've run a lot, put a lot of miles. I know they look new, but they aren't. They don't have quite the support for the structure of my lower body that they used to. That's my excuse anyway for getting a fancy pair of $70 shoes often.
We ran out of music, which means it's time to go to the next topic.
So let's go to the next story. Yeah,
yeah
exactly.
Okay. So after calling her out as a cheater and saying that she should be banned from tennis for life after her 15-month ban. That's Jeannie talking about Sharapova. Jeannie Bouchard beat Maria Sharapova after all that talk in the second round of the Madrid Open. And now Jeannie has back-to-back wins, tour-level wins, for the first time since the Australian Open. her celebration after the win was big. Is everyone getting a little too excited about this win?
It feels like it was an important win. Mm-hmm. And I don't think because of what she said about Sharapova, but because there is that sense, as you know, after 15, and you were front and center for a lot of her big matches in 2014?
No. Yeah.
2014 or 15? Where did she have the great year? When did she go to the Wimbledon final? I feel like it was 14. Either way, I feel like it was 15 because Li Na was the semifinals of the Australian Open. So I'm going to say it was 2015, and I feel like I'm very right about this. So it's only been a couple years, and she's only 23, turning 24. What I see on the women's tour.
2014.
2014? Okay. So tell me I'm wrong. I think, especially with Serena with child now, it is unbelievable. Now, it doesn't mean it's a deep field, but it's wide open. Those are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
So even more so, maybe still, Carol, and then Milos Raonic, there's a window for Jeannie to beat some of these players. Like, I'm looking at the rankings right now. I mean, Konta's sixth. Sivakova's fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Jeannie Bouchard can beat those. Now, they can beat her, too, but she can beat those players.
I agree.
She can beat Simona Halep. Are you kidding? Of course she can. So there's a window for Jeannie to have a great year, starting with the French in a couple weeks. And this was a clay win also.
I agree with you. I think this was a massive win for her, and I think it all also was big because of all the talk. I think it's good that she got herself fired up and beat Sharapova, because even though Sharapova's been off for 15 months, she's still a very good player, and she will and is already getting back into form. So I think it was a huge win for Jeannie, and I think she deservedly so could be so excited. Now the question is, can she just stay consistent and keep winning, which has been really the question her whole career since her breakout
year. But if people thought, well, that was her one shot at a Grand Slam final in Wimbledon, I remember saying after that, there's some real peaks and valleys on this tour. Again, anybody who watched Caroline Wozniacki go to the semis in 2009 of the U.S. Open would have said, there's going to be multiple slams for her. And she's been ranked number one, and she still hasn't won. And there's a ton of players. Sloane Stephens, there's a ton of players like that who haven't. Aren't you impressed by – you knew I knew the WTA anyway. I don't think we can do a WTA story every podcast.
No, I don't think so. I can't see your desktop, though, so I think you're on WTA.ca.
Even though there were people that said, point taken, well, a tennis podcast. Well, I guess I'll listen. I'm like, it's not good. No. I think people were sucked in by the name a little bit. So they may be just here for our tennis takes.
Yeah,
and they get
I hope not. Okay, final story. I love this one. So in our Luongo interview, we showed that some of our research comes from Wikipedia. We also read the New York Times, believe it or not. And this is a headline on New York Times. Police detain man who looks too much like Lionel Messi. Now, you need to Google this because you cannot tell. It's kind of a split-screen picture. You cannot tell which one is Lionel Messi and which one is this other guy. Now, they're both wearing Barcelona jerseys, so that also doesn't help. But the reason that he was detained was because so many people were coming up to him at one point taking selfies, and it got out of hand, so the police rushed him into a station and impounded his car to stop the chaos and clear the traffic. He should shave or do something. He's clearly trying to look like Lionel Messi, but have you ever been... Has someone ever come up to you thinking you're someone else?
Well, I think only other anonymous radio personalities. And sometimes the show I've been on, they'll come up and be just like, maybe they won't know who's who. So they've come up to me before and they've been like, hey, Brady and Walker. I'm like, I'm just one of them. And I'm standing by myself. But that can happen. I will say.
Is middle name in that situation?
Famously, a few people, irrespective of each other, did this where I feel like they get to know me and they're like, you know who you remind me of.
Right.
And I get Ben Stiller a lot. And I don't think it's a normal Ben Stiller. It's just Ben Stiller from Reality Bites. I don't know what it is. Like, when that movie came out, that happened.
Maybe it's from Zoolander.
It's not from Zoolander.
No, it's not from Zoolander.
I need to be in the gym a little more to do this. Ben Stiller probably had to. You got to work a little harder for Zoolander on the squats and the crunches than you did for Reality Bites. But I think it's, you know, slightly larger than average ears. Mm-hmm. Propensity to talk in long sentences.
Right, I can see that.
Weird cultural pop references.
Yes.
Pop cultural references.
Okay.
And that sort of covers the Ben Stiller thing. Now, I would guess you could walk down, and you do a lot more walking in large populated areas than I do.
I love walking, yeah.
So, someone's probably thought, that you are Ivanka Osmak.
Or no,
you
are, we look that, nothing alike.
No, but you don't have to. They just think of a name and they get the name wrong. It's like I can see a hockey player in the dressing room and I'm like, is it that guy? No, it's that guy, right?
Right. No, I've never gotten them thinking I was someone else from television. They just flat out get my name wrong. It's like, oh my gosh, Catherine, I love watching you on TSN. And I'm thinking, first of all, there's no Catherine on TV either Sportsnet or TSN.
I hear they're developing. So watch your back.
Oh,
they
okay.
are developing a Catherine, like a cyborg, like from Westworld.
I just say thank you. Once in high school, though, in my high school, it was grade 7 and 8s were included. And I was walking down the hallway. I was in grade 12, so I could have been intimidating to a 7th grader.
Are you kidding? Absolutely.
And I thought that it was my friend walking down the hall in front of me. So I proceeded to run up to her and jump on her back. And she went down, and that's when I noticed this terrified-looking 7th grader looking up at me.
So it was an assault. They're trying to cut that out in high school, like hazing and bullying.
Yeah,
and you leaped
good.
On, like there was a back leaping.
Yeah, mistaken identity. So that's why this Lionel Messi fake guy should watch out.
I don't know what he's getting out of it. It's not. And yet
probably
I'm sure,
ladies.
By the way, did you ever see at a Leafs game, there was a guy that did the Sundin thing, and he was bald, and he wore a Sundin jersey, and he looked like Mats. And he'd always be, like at the home opener, we'd broadcasting down there once, and right before the home opener, he's doing pictures with everybody, and he's signing stuff, and you know it's not him.
But is he taking it as fake Mats Sundin? It's like, hey, I got my picture
100%.
With
a 100%.
Ken Reed once got, and he was out east where he's from, and he was wearing a Crosby, I believe, T-shirt that said Crosby on the back, and someone thought he was Sidney Crosby, which is so good because Ken and Sidney Crosby do not look alike, but also that they think that Sidney Crosby would be walking around in his own T-shirt jersey.
Yeah, you can't do that. See, I thought for a long time that the Blue Jays, I would sit behind guys at when Laurie and Aaron Civi were really big, and they had T-shirts with the players' Twitter handles on the back.
Oh,
and
Team
I'm
Unit.
Just,
wasn't that Team Unit?
Well, but it didn't say Team Unit on the back, but it said, like, it just, like, the name was, like, a jersey T-shirt, but it would be, like,
so-and-so.
At VLaurie13. I'm like, what are you doing? What on earth? He's your favorite follow, so you're like, $25 for a T-shirt. I love his tweets. No one should like anyone's Twitter account that much on the planet.
We should make SN Point Taken Twitter T-shirts. Do we have a budget for that? I don't believe we have a budget.
Although after that Roberto Luongo interview, wearing a Strombone T-shirt he was probably, thank God, I got off the phone and they didn't ask about Twitter.
That's
I don't
true.
Know. Maybe he doesn't. Because remember, he was very anonymous about it. And then
oh,
you're
yeah.
like,
it still doesn't have his name on it.
Well, we've come to the end of our ability to speak and form cohesive sentences. And we both need naps in separate locations. So
yeah,
we'll come back next week. We're already working on next week's show. Is that, I'm not, we should not
Yeah, we should, yes.
And we want to thank Roberto Luongo. We want to thank Richard Deitch.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Mon and Elizabeth Hart helped put this together technically. So thanks to them also. And we'll be back.
See ya.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.